Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
We continue to be bringing you that farewell dinner for Chief Justice Raymond Zondo as he bids everybody farewell. And you may have heard, no, I did not cut him. You may have heard Chief Justice Mokgweng Mokgweng there. That's how actually he parted the stage. So he didn't even say goodbye. He walked off in that fashion and everybody killing themselves. If you could see the visuals now, they really were on the floor, so to speak. So we will bring you more of these speeches as they continue. Hoping to get something from the Minister of Justice, Minister Ngadimeng Thembisa Melane, who is scheduled to speak any minute now. As soon as she goes up onto the podium, we'll also bring that to you. I do want to tell you what we're going to be doing in the Mbuizo today. We're going to be discussing extortions. It's become a huge problem in the Eastern Cape. We are hearing that, unfortunately, businesses are having to shut down, particularly small businesses. Businesses, doctors and so on. But I think one of the most concerning lately is the issue of schools. We are hearing that these criminals are literally walking into schools and, you know, forcing teachers and schools to pay money to secure the spaces. Absolutely unacceptable. But the Hawks, as well as the SAPs in the Eastern Cape, are seemingly quite uncomfortable with what is happening. The Minister of Police went to visit the community there. And unfortunately, what we're being told is that, in fact, after the visit by the Minister of Police, things got worse. I mean, how brazen is that? Things absolutely got worse. And there's a bit debate about who exactly should be managing this issue, whether it's the Hawks, whether it's SAPS. And there's a technicality there. We'll speak to our experts and just maybe talk about what that is about. We'll also speak to SAPS themselves, who are going to explain what the issues are, because people are saying they're also afraid. They're afraid to report these crimes because nobody actually moves. Nobody actually does anything because the SAPS would say, no. This is a Hawks matter. The Hawks would say, no, we are waiting for the SAPS to actually open a case. And that in the meantime, unfortunately, making it very, very difficult for things to go through and actually action to happen. Making so many businesses go, you know, they just closed down. They just closed down. Someone said earlier on today, it's becoming a ghost town. Nobody wants to open a business here. Doctors are shutting down. Small practices are closing down because nobody can afford these extortion amounts that are being required by these criminals. We are also hearing that, by the way, yes, that the Eastern Cape has been in the news quite a bit lately, but we're hearing this is happening, you know, in Soweto. We're hearing it's happening in Diepsloot, where people in homes are told, you know, that, look, your family needs to be paying this amount each month for security. Otherwise, you know, there's a problem. It's absolutely unheard of. In my books, it's quite scary. We are told as well, the Hawks are saying, well, we must remember this is a new type of crime in this country. They themselves are still grappling with what to do with this thing. Very, very concerning. I do have on the line, I've asked two people to join us. I've asked the SAPS, as I said, to really give us a sense of what they understand to be happening. They'll give us a global view of what's happening, not just in the Western Cape. And then we'll be speaking to an expert about what really is going on as well. So let me just bring them in. Researcher at the Global Initiative Against Transactional Organized Crime, Ginny Irish Kobeshiani, is on the line with us. I really appreciate you making time for us, Ginny. Good evening and welcome.
Evening to you and your listeners.
Well, thank you so much for making time for us. I just want to give us, you guys have done a lot of work around this crime. For many of us, we're still unclear exactly how actually it's structured. Give us just a broader understanding of what these syndicates typically do.
So I think you would have different types of syndicates involved. So if one looks at, you have a number of different extortion economies operating. So if one looks at, for example, the local township extortion economies, a lot of the syndicates that we're seeing are local township gangs that have become very involved in extortion practices. And many of those gangs would have started off initially extorting foreign-owned businesses, but then post-COVID, we've seen that expand to any business, be they formal or informal, etc. If one looks at then in the city center and the kind of extortion that's taking place in the city center, we're talking about some quite serious underworld figures, some of whom are currently have been arrested and are before the courts, such as Nasiz Modak and Mark Liffman. But they are also backed up by gangs coming, by some of your traditional gangs coming from areas around the Cape Flats, etc. And then you see in the taxi industry, where you see the transport extortion economy, we're seeing that economy has existed for some time and often involves particular elements within the taxi industry that are not only exploiting membership of the taxi industry through things like the bucket system, but also exploiting private vehicles, buses, contract work, companies who are providing transport to their workers, etc., and extorting them.
And do we have a sense, you know, we are obviously getting a lot of it, the stories are coming through the media quite a bit lately. Is it very new or are we seeing just a massive increase?
So we are definitely seeing quite a significant increase. And there are new types of extortion economies emerging. So in the Western Cape, one of the economies that we identified, which is a national economy, but started around 2015, 2016, so relatively recently, is your construction extortion economy. Mm. If one looks at the extortion economy in the taxi industry, that's been going for a very long time. But what we are seeing is that the types of extortion, when we're now seeing buses, we're now seeing scholar transport, we're now seeing even some private vehicles, that is relatively new. In Gauteng, you see the emergence, in Gauteng and some of the other provinces like KwaZulu-Natal, you see the emergence of something called the water mafia or the tanker mafia, which is also an extortion practice that is relatively new. So some of these economies are older and others are relatively new. But even the older economies, we've seen quite a dramatic expansion of the activities more recently.
And, you know, what is concerning are the kidnappings. I think we are seeing that a lot in the urban areas, in Gauteng, a lot of that as well. And that seems to also be quite gaining some momentum. I haven't recently heard the numbers yet, but are we also getting an increase there or are we sort of settling down with that one?
I think we are seeing, over the last couple of years, we have seen an increase in kidnapping for ransom. I know that when we look at the kidnapping figures, we always have to be a little bit careful because very often there's an overlap between kidnappings, for example, and hijackings, where when a vehicle is hijacked, sometimes that gets reported as a kidnapping. But I think when we look at kidnapping for ransom, we are seeing an increase in those, and we're seeing some very specific types of targeting. We're seeing a lot of transnational organized crime syndicates that are involved in quite high level kidnapping for ransom. But then we're also seeing some low level copycat kidnappings taking place.
In the case of what you spoke about earlier, where typically it happens in the township where small businesses are targeted, we are now hearing that, you know, doctors are getting targeted. Schools, that sounds new to me. Are you very familiar with what it is that they require schools and teachers to do?
I'm not really sure about the schools. I know that doctors, it's affecting all businesses. Sometimes you even have workers targeted and they get forced to pay to act because they're working and to pay a protection fee because they're working. So I'm not really sure in the case of schools, but I do know that we've even seen some churches being targeted. And churches have always been kind of hallowed ground that people don't really attack. And we're starting to see more and more those churches becoming targets. Now, it's unclear in some instances whether those are being targeted by extortionists or whether they are being targeted just by opportunists who see that you've got people at the churches with cell phones, with money, with whatever else. But definitely we are seeing in some of the townships that even things that were sacrosanct in the past, like churches, are now beginning to be targeted.
We're also hearing, Jenny, that there's a concern around reporting these crimes. People saying that they really are afraid because every time they get to the police say, well, it's not really our matter. It's a matter for the hawks and vice versa. So a bit of a moving around there where people don't really know where to go. And in the meantime, you know, they get bigger threats. Your sense of how the law enforcement is dealing with this?
I do think that there have been, look, I mean, I think that if one looks at some areas, and it varies from area to area, but if one looks at, for example, in Cape Town, I think we have seen, I think we need to give credit where credit is due. We have seen some arrests. We've seen in places like Khayelitsha, we've seen one of the key people involved in the extortion networks being arrested, albeit not for extortion, but for other crimes. He's nevertheless been arrested. We've seen in the construction sector industry, we've seen somebody like Stanfield, one of the key gang members, who's also been linked to some of the extortion in the construction sector, being arrested. So we have seen some quite significant arrests. However, I do think that there are problems in the way in which we are approaching extortion more generally. There's been a task team set up in KwaZulu-Natal and in the Western Cape, and I think they are doing a relatively good job. But I still think our approach to this is exactly what you identified, that it's very uncoordinated. And how the local police station deals with it, how you have different groups. You've got the DPCI, you've got the task team, you've got a range of different groups dealing with different criminals that are involved in these extortion networks. And what we require is a much more coordinated strategy and approach, whether we're talking about in the Western Cape or whether we're talking about in places like Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal.
And these arrests that you're referring to, I mean, have they required massive operations, or, you know, is it the kind of arrest where people get the kind of response that's required when you just go to the police station and maybe I'm running my little shop, or I'm running my little, I don't know, I'm a doctor and I've got a little shop and I'm the police, you know, really deal with my case? Or are there more sort of high profile cases where we see arrests and the rest are not getting the right attention?
I think what we're seeing, what the cases I'm referring to are more high profile cases. I still think that there are problems in reporting at local police station level. One, in terms of how they deal with the type of crime, because sometimes it's not even recorded as extortion. Mm. It could be reported as intimidation or vandalism or that kind of thing. So I think that we are seeing that at a local police station level, there are problems in terms of how this crime is recorded, how it's dealt with at that local police station level. And I think when one comes to extortion, you have a problem. Internationally, there's a problem with reporting of the crime. People are scared. A very clear aspect of extortion is violence and threat that comes with the extortion. So people are scared to report it. And when there's a lack of trust between the police and communities, it's even less likely that people are going to report it. And I think one of the things that we really need to do is to look at a reporting mechanism where people feel they can safely report this, because that reporting becomes crucial for us, not only in terms of dealing with the specific cases as they arise, but also to be able to identify trends and the magnitude of extortion that we are dealing with.
Are we collecting the data sufficiently so that whatever strategy is looked at is coordinated, backed by the data that we have?
Absolutely not. I mean, I think that is one of the things the Cape Town report that we have done is part of a series of reports that we are producing. And the next one in the series is Gauteng. And that is clearly one of the issues we have identified in the report, is a lack of data. And without that adequate data, we really don't know the magnitude of the problem we're dealing with. We know from anecdotal information that this is a growing problem, that it is expanding quite rapidly, but we don't know the true magnitude of it. We we don't have, I think that that data becomes critically important in us addressing a comprehensive response and approach, and a policy driven, data driven approach to this. And you're absolutely right. We don't have enough data, around this. We rely a lot on anecdotes. I mean, I do think that in some areas we have a little more data than others. For example, in Cape Town, I know that the city of Cape Town has been collecting stats specifically on construction sites, but those would be city-based construction sites that the city is funding, where the city is funding the development. We still don't have a complete handle on private sites and that sort of thing. So I think in some areas we have a bit of data, but in most areas we are very lacking in data and in pulling the data we do have together.
Typically, you know, maybe help us, you know, understand how these operate, in the sense that what I thought was quite bizarre over the weekend was just report after report that there has been an escalation of these extortion syndicate, whatever it is that they do, and in different ways. But this is on the back of the minister having visited the area, trying to understand what is required, making sure obviously that it's, you know, they have a handle on it. Explain to me why that would be the case, that after the minister has come through, shown his face and the willingness to do something, then there would be this peak of these extortion crimes.
I think very often you've got the people that are involved in these crimes are highly organized, and they would be showing their muscle. I mean, if the minister visits an area and says, this is something we're going to deal with, recognizing that in visiting that area, the minister is taking the issue seriously, but that his visit alone isn't going to solve the problem. We need to have an approach that's backed up, that his visit backs up. And at the same time, for the extortionists, they need to prove to the people that, hang on, we've still got muscle here. So you still better pay us. Don't stop paying us because the minister came and told us that this is something he's going to deal with. So you will see very often when they feel that their economy is under threat, the criminal elements involved in this will elevate the violence to actually make sure that they have that their victims actually realize that they hold power.
I've asked people to call in, Jenny, if you don't mind. We'll take some calls just to give us their experiences of extortion and their stories. Dr. Selby is calling us from Orange Farm. Good evening and welcome, Dr. Selby.
Good evening, Tamelo. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome, Dr. Selby. How are you?
I'm blessed beyond measure. My brother, how are you there?
It's Jenny is on Zoom. I'm not sure she can hear you, but I'll make sure. Okay. So just go ahead and I'll tell her.
Sorry, I can't hear you. Sorry.
Okay, all right. She can hear you. She can hear you. That is how we go ahead.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. No, you know, Pamela, I'm so much worried, Pamela.
Yeah.
Because this thing has started. The thugs have hijacked our buildings here in Johannesburg City. The government didn't do anything. They've hijacked our minds. The government didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. Now they are hijacking South Africa as a whole. Because this is, they're hijacking South Africa by so doing. Mm-hmm. And the government still is doing nothing. They say we have to report. Something that they know. What we have to report is because they know what is happening. No. Truly,
I hear you, Dr. Selby. Jenny, I mean, obviously, as you said earlier, you know, there's data is limited, and you are doing a lot of the work. But what would have to happen? Coordination is one of the things that you spoke to. What would have to happen to, at least in the short term, try and prevent an escalation, even though we would have to then do a lot more on the ground to eliminate it completely?
You know, I think that we have made a number of recommendations, which we believe need to fit into one coordinated strategy. You can't have one local government or one municipality or one area adopting this approach and another adopting that approach. We need a comprehensive strategy across the board. And there are certain things. Yes, we've spoken about data. Yes, we've spoken about reporting. We need to look at early warning. Those are all well and good. But I do think there are some very concrete things that we can do now. Mm-hmm. One is we need to actually identify who are some of the key role players in this extortion, in the extortion networks that are operating. And there needs to be a concerted, who of those organized criminal groups are causing the most harm, and how can the National Prosecuting Authority and the police work together in being able to deal with them. But I also think that we need to look at the issue of the capacity for violence, that these groups require violence in order to make sure that people succumb to their demands. Mm. And one aspect of that is firearms. We need to start looking at these groups' access to firearms, which is to some extent a little bit of a low-hanging fruit that we can deal with. Another thing we need to do is look at building community resilience. And I want to give an example which is not a South African example, but which took place in Italy, and which example has been looked at and tailored for Latin America, where they've used that, some of those things where they brought together the community, businesses and the government. Mm-hmm. And they launched a campaign called Adios Pesos, mm. which loosely translated meant farewell to extortion. Mm. What it did was government came in and said, we will provide some security for you. We will also look at who are the people involved in this extortion. Mm. Business said, we will stand up to extortion, but they also receive some support from government to be able to stand up, as well as the community saying, not in our name, we will support businesses that stand up to extortion. And it had quite significant success. So I do think that there are things that we can do to build our resilience as communities and business and government together in dealing with this. But I also think that there are things that the government itself needs to do, such as dealing with a more coordinated approach between the National Prosecuting Authority and the police around the key organized elements involved in this type of extortion.
How infiltrated are the police themselves?
Look, I don't think from our work on extortion, I don't think it is just the police. Mm-hmm. We know that and not just in places like the Western Cape, but we know that in places even in Gauteng and in some places like Westbury and Elder Road apart, the infiltration into the police has become so extensive that you actually have policemen enmeshed in the extortion economies, as opposed to just being paid bribes to turn a blind eye. They've become enmeshed in those economies. But it's not just the police that we're talking about here. We're also talking about local government officials and people in positions of authority. So if you're looking at the transport extortion economy, you're talking about people in provincial and local government and in the licensing departments, etc. There, if you're talking about local government, you're talking about people within some of the water and sanitation that are working together with some of the people involved in the water mafia. So you're seeing this infiltration not just at the level of the police, but also at the level of other government officials. And even to some extent in Gauteng, we saw that people involved in extortion in the construction sector during the last local elections started to target specific individuals who they didn't feel would support them. And some of those individuals who were standing as ward councillors were actually taken out during that period because they weren't going to support this kind of behaviour happening.
So, I mean, there's the element of violence that you spoke to, and we can do something about that. But then there's the organised crime within, you know, all sorts of levels, even in government, as you're saying, that will take some doing to weed that out.
I think it absolutely will. I mean, there's no question about it. It will. I think we've seen some quite positive steps from the NPA recently around beginning to deal with corruption, and hopefully that will send a message. But I do think that each local government department needs to look at the integrity of their departments when it comes to areas of extortion, very much like, and take action against people that are involved in these kind, are linked into these extortion economies. I do think that within the police, we need to identify particular areas where it's become beyond just paying a bribe, where the criminal pays a bribe, but it becomes where there are certain areas in the country where the police have become enmeshed in the extortion economies. And maybe we need to prioritize some of those areas and target some of those areas first and then move on to the broader corruption that is taking place.
I really thank you. I want to take a quick break, if you don't mind, Jenny. I need to do this. And then when I get back, we will also be including the police in this conversation. And do call in 086-000-0959. You can send those voice notes on 063-688-0959. We're discussing extortion and what it looks like for you. Maybe you are one of those small businesses where you've had criminals say, well, pay us security fees. In fact, I know that in Diepsloot, it's been an issue as well, where as well as in Soshanguve, there were issues around some communities where there are just people who collect money from residents for security. So I'd love to hear from you. If you have any stories to tell us, I'd love to hear from you. My guest is a researcher at the Global Initiative Against Transactional Organized Crime, Jenny Irish-Kobeshiane, as well as I'm going to be speaking to the SAPS National Spokesperson, Atlan Martin, in a short while. Thank you so much for staying with us. We're discussing extortion. We were in conversation, and she's still there, researcher at the Global Initiative Against Transactional Organized Crime, Jenny Irish-Kobeshiane. And I'm also joined by the SAPS's National Spokesperson, Atlan Martin. Thank you so much, Brigadier Martin, for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
A very good evening to you and to your listeners.
So we've been speaking, as you know, we've been getting reports from, particularly lately, from the Eastern Cape about these massive syndicates busy with extortion for small businesses. And we're hearing reports about schools, churches and the like. Do you have a sense of how widespread it is outside of the Eastern Cape?
Well, we are facing a challenge when it comes to the extortion. So we have identified that it's prevalent in most of the provinces. We have identified Eastern Cape. We have identified Free State, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, as well as the Western Cape, that has the majority of these extortionists that are, demanding protection fees from businesses and people operating within certain communities. And that's what prompted the National Commissioner, after his appointment, to then establish task teams in each district that has been identified as hotspots in the country. So it's not only the Eastern Cape. We have dedicated capacities in each province, but it seems as though Western Cape and Eastern Cape are the most problematic.
Our guest, Jenny Irish-Kobeshiane, was telling us of the various types of extortion economies. What are you seeing more prevalent at the moment? She spoke of, we all know about the construction mafias and the like. But from what your reports, as you're saying, you are privy to what's happening nationally. But what is more prevalent at the moment? What type of extortion economy are you seeing more prevalent?
So it did start with the construction extortion fees, where it started with communities in a certain area would demand for community employment and a 30% share in their projects that would be awarded in that particular community. So it was commonly known as the 30% gang, and they would demand that 30% from the business that would be, or the company that would be awarded a particular tender. But now we are seeing copycat groupings. Now they're actually going to businesses. We have heard of late, they go to the health facilities and they demand the protection fees from these businesses to say, to ensure that your business doesn't get burgled or robbed, you need to then pay this protection fee. And in Gauteng, I think it was in Mamelodi years ago, we even heard of, even street vendors paying these protection fees. But we are quite confident that we have in custody, I think, Vusi Khekhe, who was sentenced. He was one of the key figures that was identified to say he was one of those who was demanding the protection fees from your Mamelodi and your Pretoria community. So at least we have him behind bars. He has been sentenced for the murder of Wandile Bozwane and the attempted murder of Wandile's business associate. So we are seeing in the Eastern Cape, which is a concern, where we are told that even old people in villages are expected to now pay, you know, young boys these protection fees, and you might, I mean, old people are not in, some of them they're pensioners, they're not in business, so it's getting to that point where, you know, it's now in villages and so on, and that's why we saw the need to then deploy extra capacity. But even with the deployment, we even made a call and raised a concern to say, with the extortion cases, it's quite difficult to investigate them because the community is not always coming forward with names. But we then realized through investigation that these extortionists, they use these fear tactics on communities, on innocent people, and they instill that fear that people don't even want to name and shame them. So that is an element that we are struggling with, because remember, for us to pin down these extortionists, we need the statements from various witnesses. We need people who will be our witnesses in court, and you know, so that we are able to apprehend and put a stop to these extortionists. But I must say, we are trying to make inroads. We are trying our level best to deal decisively with this extortion, or what you call your protection fee gangs.
I mean, to what extent do you your own investigation internally? Because a lot of the residents that we are hearing, they're saying, well, part of the problem is that not only are they fearful of those, you know, very, very harsh tactics that the extortionists use, violence and so on, but they fear that the police themselves are part of these gangs and these syndicates.
You know, it's very quick to point fingers at the police. We always say, you know, police officers wear a name badge. If you can bring us that information anonymously, we will deal decisively with those police officers that don't belong within our ranks. So in the last 5 years, I mean, we have dismissed 2,118 police officers. That is a large number, and that does demonstrate that we follow a zero-tolerance approach to corruption, to gross misconduct within the service. So I don't think that issue of police are involved in this holds water. What are you doing about it as a citizen? Are you watching these police officers, you know, do their own thing and so on? Why aren't you coming to the party? There's a station commander at the station, at a local station, who you can talk to and say, listen, I've got information of this particular police officer who is involved in these activities. And I can tell you, we've got an anti-corruption unit that is investigating such cases. And I mean, if you're talking 2,118 police officers that were dismissed, and some of them are now wearing the orange uniform, it does tell you that management is serious about removing rogue elements within the system.
Well, it should concern you, Brigadier Mate, because people cannot be singing from the same hymn book, and for you to be dismissing it as the police saying, well, we've got people behind bars. Clearly, then, you've got a bigger problem than you are willing to admit to, because you hear this often, and this is not just from me. You, everywhere you go, people tell you that they don't trust the police. They don't trust the very same commander of the police station. You've heard this before many times.
That's why I say, let's work together. I always openly give out my number, 082-040-8808. You don't have to deal with the local station if you don't trust them. Bring that information to us. We will deal decisively with those who do not belong in the blue uniform and belong in the orange uniform. So I'm not saying I'm shying away, and I'm not saying police officers are not involved, but what I'm saying is that where we detect that there is wrongdoing, there is criminality within the ranks, we deal decisively with it.
And would you be able to say that for communities, for instance, in your El Dorado Park, who tell you this every single day that no one goes to the police anymore because the police know the gangs, for instance? I mean, you know that the problem is much more systemic than that. It's not one individual.
The challenge that we are having with the gang-infested communities is that in some instances, the same community members that are complaining are the same community members that are shielding these gangsters. We have been very vocal about it in the Western Cape to say some community members actually shield these gangsters because these gangsters put food on their table. So when they think of removing that source of income that is putting food on their table, they refuse to work with the police. So yes, we do find some elements of police officers that don't belong in the blue uniform, but as like I've indicated, we detect it, we investigate, we remove them immediately when there's concrete evidence that there is wrongdoing. But I can tell you, in the communities that are having the gang wars and, you know, gang-infested areas, that is our main challenge. Mm-hmm. The community refuses to be witnesses. They refuse to name and shame. And that's why we then have some of the big problems. I mean, if you look at Westbury, I mean, just last week we arrested 4 gang members. There was, we have sentenced quite a number of them across the country, not only. If you look at the Western Cape, one of the notorious gang leaders, Nafiz Modak, is in custody. We've got Ralph Stainfield. Those are the key role players and the key figures when you talk about gangsters in the Western Cape. They are behind bars, and his wife as well, and many others. So where we detect wrongdoing, and when communities work closely with us, you will surely see the result.
I really appreciate your time there, Brigadier Atlenda Mate, who's a national spokesperson of the police. Jenny, I still have you on the line. You want to comment there on what we heard from the police?
I do think that the Brigadier, with all due respect, I think we have seen some, and I think I mentioned it before the Brigadier joined us, there have been some significant arrests. We need to recognize that. Arrests of people like Barra from Khayelitsha, arrests of people like Stanfield, Murdoch, who isn't a gangster, who's more of a criminal entrepreneur linked into the gangs, etc. I think we have seen those significant arrests. But with all due respect, I do think we need to understand that many communities where these extortion economies are operating are living in fear. Mm. Whether they're in Mamelodi, because it's still going on in Mamelodi at quite a, I mean, people are even paying for water in Mamelodi. In Alexandra Township, where you have people around the Alex Mall calling themselves caretakers, forcing all street vendors to pay extortion fees, where people who own a hairdressing salon in Alex say, we can't afford to pay the money every week, but we can't afford not to because we're scared. With all due respect, it isn't always a situation of people benefiting from the gangsters. People are scared, and they're scared to come forward, and we need to change that climate. And they're scared to come to the police because, whether we like it or not, there are police. Some of these organized criminal elements have infiltrated certain levels within the police. So there are elements within the police that are corrupt. So we need to understand that it isn't just a question of communities buy into the gangs. There are also communities that live in fear of these extortion gangs and of the gangs in those areas. So I think that that's one of the things. And I do think that reporting corruption isn't easy, particularly if it's corruption linked to extortion and organized crime. I think that isn't easy for people, and we need to make it easier. It isn't as simple as just going to your local police station and reporting it. So I think we need to make it a lot easier for people to report. But I do think the Brigadier is right in saying we've seen some significant arrests. But I think it isn't just a Western Cape and Eastern Cape problem.
Yeah.
You can go to Alex Township now, and almost every business is being extorted. Your hairdressing salons, your people operating outside the Alex Mall, there they have a group that call themselves the caretakers that are extorting them. If you go to Mamelodi, I know there have been some significant arrests, but Boko Haram is still operating and still involved in extortion. If you look at the kind of construction extortion that's happening around the country, it isn't just, I think that the Western Cape and Eastern Cape may be on the police's radar, but I think it's a bigger problem than just the Western Cape and Eastern Cape. Certainly our Gauteng report is showing that this is extensive. You're talking about communities like Westbury and Eldorado Park. You're talking about communities like Shoshanguve and Mamelodi. You're talking about communities like Alex. You're even talking about places like Norwood, where this extortion is happening. And then it's happening in the transport sector, and then it's happening in the construction sector, and then you've got the water mafia operating. So I think we need to look at this as a much bigger national problem than what we're looking at it at the moment.
Let me just get Temba, who's listening in from Heidelberg, on the line. Temba, good evening and welcome.
Morning, how are you, Mrs.
Gay? I'm good, welcome.
In fact, I'm listening to the so-called Great Idea, narrating somewhat of a nice poem for you, the Gadir. You know what? Not long time ago, it was made clear to us that there is a staggering number of the so-called police officers of this so-called affirmative action who have a criminal record of whatever form. Mm. So I don't remember hearing anything from the department, as to what they did or what action they took in order to tackle that issue. You get my point?
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose that has been one of the greater contributing factors to this predicament that we are facing today as a country. Mm. You get my point?
Mm.
And lastly, just in 30 seconds, lastly,
yeah.
I think I want to make this point to you, Mr. Kenner. So I relate it again that this so-called affirmative action, it should be set down. You get my point? Because it doesn't work for South Africans, you know. It only works for ANC people and if alliances. Sorry, alliances that we don't know of, you know. But not for me and you people on the ground level, you see. So it has to just be scraped down and people who are competent, you know, in either public or private services, they have to be empowered, you know, with whatever resources or jobs and stuff like that. So, yeah. I think I have made my point. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much, Temba. Jenny, maybe your parting shots, because, you know, it is disheartening. I think we would have to start with acknowledging the weaknesses so that we can then, you know, proactively all do our bit. But I am getting the sense that the police obviously have their backs against the wall and, yes, doing whatever they can, but maybe in not enough acknowledgement about how deep the problem is within the police themselves.
I think you're right about how deep the problem is within the police themselves, but I think that this is broader than just a police issue.
Mm.
And I think that the fact that we're having these kinds of conversations and beginning to start grappling with how do we take this process forward, I think it's a very positive thing. That this is something that if we're going to deal with extortion, we need to bring together government and different levels of government, including the police, etc. We need to bring business and we need to bring community together. And I think that programs like this can play a critical role in highlighting what needs to be done and the fact that we all need to come together to begin to deal with this. And so I do think that, yes, it's very disillusioning when we hear how extensive this is becoming, how it is really affecting the economy. And I'm not just talking about your formal economy, but even your informal economy. But I think that the more we have these kinds of discussions, the more we begin to raise this issue and say, we need to come together. We need to work out a comprehensive strategy and approach to dealing with this. Then I think that we are taking steps in the right direction.
I really, really appreciate your time. Researcher at the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime, Jenny Iris Tobashiani. And I also had a conversation with the SAPS national spokesperson, Athlenda Mate. Thank you very much for all of you who've been taking a part in this conversation. I want to take a quick break. And when I come back, I promised you we will be going to the Chief Justice's farewell dinner where the minister is speaking. We will take you there in a short while.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.